Welcome to Cultivating Greatness, a podcast dedicated to all aspects and experiences of leadership in the world. The mission and purpose of this podcast is to inspire everyone to uncover, live in, lead from, and make an authentic impact on the world from their highest and best self. The premise of this podcast is that everyone is a leader, regardless of their job or position. This is Dr. Deb Horton. I'm a leadership coach and excited to bring a podcast interview to you with Ken Daly, who is the president of STAC, which is a college in New York, St. Thomas Aquinas College. Today, we are talking together about massive career change in the middle of life. And Ken is really an amazing example. So welcome, Ken. So happy to have you.
Thanks, Deb. Really delighted to be here and to share my story and to pass on any feedback I can to your listeners.
Awesome. So tell me what you do now. What is your current role? Tell us about that.
Yeah. For the last 2 years now, I've been blessed to be the president of St. Thomas Aquinas College, a small private college here in New York, a bit north of Manhattan. And the blessing for me is, you know, after 30 years in corporate, to have an opportunity now to give back and work with students and help prepare them for success. So my job, as you might imagine, is running the college, but my real job is supporting the students.
Beautiful. So Ken, what did you do prior to this position as president of STAC?
Yeah, prior to becoming the president of the college, for 30 years, I had an amazing career in the energy industry. I was with a company called National Grid and its predecessors. I actually started right out of college in meter reading, and over the 30 years, worked my way up to become the president of the company. During those 30 years, had so many opportunities here in New York, across the U.S., and even had a chance to live and work in the United Kingdom. So an amazing 30-year opportunity to work in the energy industry. Yeah, I was blessed. It was the type of company, once you joined, you wanted to stay. There were so many opportunities. And at the same time, the company was going through a lot of transformation. We did several mergers. So each time the company changed, I was given new opportunities to learn, to develop, you know, to lead new teams. So even though it was one company, it really felt like, you know, 20 different positions and 3 or 4 different careers. When I started, it was just the Brooklyn Union Gas Company, just a small little utility, primarily in Brooklyn, New York, with about 1 million customers and a market value of $1 billion. When I retired, we had somewhere in the range of 20 million customers and a market value of $50 billion. So the company transformed, you know, in front of my eyes, and I was part of that journey. About 25,000 employees while I was working for the company. The business I ran, the New York business, had about 10,000 employees, but the real mantra of the company was to serve customers, you know, provide gas and electric, and now more and more clean energy to emerging communities as we go forward.
What was being a leader at National Grid like for you?
Yeah, there were definitely different phases of my career. So the first 10 years, you know, we were just Brooklyn Union Gas, kind of the formative years. I worked in meter reading and customer service, human resources. And I'd say the middle 10 years, we started to go through transformation as a company. We merged with Long Island. We merged with Boston. And I started to take bigger and bigger roles on at the company, particularly in the area of finance. In fact, at one point, I was the controller of the entire company. And then the last 10 years were the leadership roles, where I was running large parts of the business. As I mentioned, spent a few years in the United Kingdom. And then when I came home, it was the opportunity to lead, you know, a large number of people, again, part of the clean energy challenge, part of storm response, but really running a very, very large day-to-day business.
Amazing. And you were working essentially for a publicly owned multinational organization with tens of thousands of people.
Yeah, in the old days, you'd call it a utility company. Now you'd call it one of the largest, most important clean energy companies in the world.
So after 30 years, you decide to change tracks completely. And tell me a little bit about that thought process for you?
Yeah, so it was a challenge, to be honest. You know, 30 years with one company, had never gone on an interview outside the company, other than, you know, so many opportunities within the companies. But it was time to move on. You know, I had a great run, really had reached the highest levels I could within National Grid. And I wanted a new challenge and a new opportunity. So I actually retired on my 53rd birthday. And I had given myself a goal of becoming a college president. Some may say a daunting goal because of the prior 100 college presidents, only one had come from corporate, you know, one out of 100. So a bit of a long shot. But honestly, for my whole career, this had been my ambition. This had been my dream that someday I'd become a college president. So I was fortunate to work for a company that allowed us to give back to the local community. And pretty much from my first day in the company, all of my extracurricular activities, if you will, were in education. My first day on the job, I was out in a high school teaching applied economics to students, you know, just as a brand new employee as part of our community service. Then I became a college professor for 25 years and went back to my alma mater and taught at night as part of, you know, giving back to that school. Did a lot of workforce development programs, created curriculum in STEM. At one point, I even opened up my own high school, Energy Tech High School in Queens, a charter type school to help students who are interested in the STEM fields. So really, I always had the passion for higher ed, was blessed to be able to utilize that passion through my energy experience, but now wanted that full-time commitment to really give back. Yeah, my passion for education is really born from the fact that I was given the opportunity. I received a full scholarship to attend college. If I hadn't, I wouldn't have been able to attend college. You know, my dad was a New York City firefighter, 5 children, funded all of our education up until then. But for college, you know, we were on our own. And when I received the scholarship, it opened up doors for me, doors that ever since have led to wonderful opportunities. But I think the real joy and the passion I have is for helping the students start their career journeys. I've probably hired, I don't know, 1,000, if you can imagine, internships, co-ops, you know, full-time employees right out of college. And I just love the opportunity to help mentor, shape, develop them. And here at the college, getting to do that on a full-time basis really is a gift.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like your passion is born of a feeling of gratitude for what you received in terms of opportunities and scholarships and stuff.
It's definitely a pay it forward type of a story in that, you know, I remember when I was in college and everyone would register for classes, they then had to go to the finance office to pay. And I always remember getting a stamp that mine was already paid for. And I felt so honored and privileged that the college would give me that opportunity. Now, back then, I think tuition was $5,000 per year. It's a little higher now, but $20,000. And I remember setting a goal for myself that someday I want to pay back the college $20,000. You know, they funded my education. And I'm proud to say I've, you know, funded that back many, many times over through scholarships and other philanthropic support, but definitely, you know, felt obligated after being given the opportunity to directly pay it back, but then more broadly now to help others on their journey.
And so St. Thomas Aquinas College actually serves the population of less advantaged students. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, part of our mission, you know, going back to the founding of the college in 1952, is to provide an opportunity for those who would otherwise not have it. When I was inaugurated as president, I made one promise, and that was that financial need will never be a barrier for any student attending STAC. If you can't afford it, we will find a way. And really proud that if you look at the mix of our students, it really runs the gamut. You know, our honor students, I have a picture of them right behind me. They just came back from the summer in Oxford. You know, they studied overseas. They are top-notch students that you would put up there against any students across the country. Then we have other students who probably would be the typical, you know, college student, very solid, work hard, you know, get through college with solid grades. But there's others who, to be quite honest, are not yet ready for college, and we take them in. But in order to get them ready, we bring them in over the summer beforehand, and we put them through a month where they live on campus and they take remedial courses. And by the time September comes, they're ready. In fact, this afternoon, one of the honors of my job, we have our new student convocation. and I get to welcome the students, you know, for the first time and formally address them. Mm. I will look them in the eye and I will tell them the commitment I'm making to them, but at the same time, the commitment that they need to make to themselves. So it's really about, you know, turning the lives around of students who, for whatever reason, may not have had that opportunity.
Really, that it is so important to help those who haven't had advantages like some of the other people in our country. So let's talk a little bit about what it's like to be the president of St. Thomas Aquinas compared to what it was like to be the president of National Grid New York.
Yeah, I would say half of it correlates and translates almost perfectly. The skills you learn in leadership, in business, translates one for one. So skills of setting a vision for an organization, of aligning employees around that vision, of motivating them on how to achieve the vision, and then organizing and executing, that translates whether it's higher ed, whether it's corporate, whether it's any industry whatsoever. You know, leadership, I really do believe, translates. So I would say half the job, somewhat surprisingly, very, very similar. The other half is very different. So favorite part of my day by far, 8 o'clock out in the morning, out at the front gate. I'm half president and half parent. Greet the students. How are we doing? Did you do your homework? Do you have breakfast? What's going on? And really just try to make them feel like it's not them against the world. It's me and them and our faculty and our whole team against the world. And guess what? We're going to win. They're going to win. So a lot more is, individual care, day-to-day nurturing of young men and women, support on an individual basis, because that's how you change lives. You can't take a macro approach. You really have to find out what each student needs and then surround them with the resources. Very rarely am I the resource, but fortunately I have access to all of our resources so I can help them either find them a job on campus, get them a tutor, set up study hours, really find out what it is they need. Sometimes they need a coat for the winter. You know, sometimes they need laundry detergent. You never know until you really get to know the students. And we really try to solve whatever the gaps are in their lives that could prevent them from having a quality education experience.
That's a beautiful thing. Wonderful.
Thank you.
And so why did you get the job?
I went into this opportunity, I believe, incredibly well prepared. And I like to tell folks I prepared three ways. One was mentally. So I actually went away and became a student again. I went to college president school. Believe it or not, there's a class called How to Be a College President. And most of my classmates were provosts, were higher ed leaders, deans, you know, folks who've been in the industry and aspired to become a president. I was the only one from outside the industry. Part of it was really preparing myself academically and mentally, make sure I was ready. You know, second was physically, from a lot of the readings I've done and a lot of the work in my prior life, you need to be physically fit. You need to be prepared for the challenge. There's long days. There's a lot of commitment required. So I went into almost like a military-like physical fitness routine, took advantage of a little bit of a gap between one career and the start of the new career. And I made sure that I was physically as sharp as possible going in. And then finally, I would say it was emotionally. You know, the hardest part about leaving National Grid was that's all I had known. I'd been there 30 years. That was my life. And I felt if I would have looked back, it really would have prevented me from looking forward. And I made sure that, you know, from March 31st, my birthday forward, I focused on becoming a college president, not a former energy executive. So I would say I was well prepared, was on one end of it. The fortunate part and the part that lined up so well is the college was going through a transition that previously had been led by religious order and led incredibly well. Now the board was looking for more of a strategic leader, perhaps from the business world, someone who could set a new vision, make an investment phase for the college. So my interview coincided with the board completing one chapter of incredible success for the college and now looking to launch this next phase, the next chapter of the college. So it couldn't have gone better. You know, the interview process was incredibly rigorous. It's much different than corporate. It's a public process. You come on campus, you have probably 10 or 15 90-minute meetings where you present for 20 minutes, and then you take questions for 70. So you're on your toes the whole time. for me, that was my sweet spot. I had done that for a living for 30 years, but that's where the mental preparation, the physical fitness, the emotional preparedness all came through. And I think on campus, I was able to demonstrate to the entire community, because they all get a vote, that for the next phase of where the college was coming, the combination of my corporate background and higher ed experience was the right mix for the college. So I'd say half preparation and half, you know, being in the right place at the right time.
Well, it sounds like the college really needed exactly what you have cultivated.
Yeah, I mean, the training that I was given at National Grid, you know, was world class. You know, the classes I've had a chance to take, I went to a full-time program at Harvard for 2 months on leadership training. I've been to schools around the world. That translated one for one and became almost a playbook on how to lead an organization, whether it's a large energy company or a small private college.
So what have you learned in this process of making massive mid-career transition?
I think a few things. You know, one, first and foremost, would be to follow your passion. You know, you spend more time at work than anything else. You know, I'm here literally 24/7. I live here on campus during the week, and I love living here on campus. I want to be here. I want to be present. But if I didn't love it, right, it would become a chore. So I would say follow your passion. Having said that, you know, just following your passion can be dangerous. You need to have a plan. You need to have a plan. You need to prepare yourself. And I think you also need to know where you need help. So a lot of what we've discussed today is how well prepared I was. If I could be honest with you and your listeners, I was also very unprepared. As I said, I hadn't gone through this in 30 years. I didn't know the first thing about LinkedIn and social media. I actually partnered with an outside firm that specialized in helping place senior executives like myself. Incredibly helpful. They filled in the gaps that I had over the last 30 years. They were experts at LinkedIn. They were experts in getting me out there. They helped me position my resume so it sounded a little bit less like a 30-year energy guy and really highlighted some of the things that I've done in higher ed. So I would say, you know, first and foremost, follow your passion, have a plan, but reach out for help. Reach out for help. The day before I presented here on campus, I went to a communications coach and I practiced on him. I was a lot better the next day. The week before my interview, I went on a mock interview with the outside firm. I was a lot better the second time. So know where you have gaps. Don't try to do it yourself. Utilize your network. Even when you have 30 years experience, believe me, you're always learning. So I would say passion, preparation, and use your support network.
Excellent. Thank you for that. Any other advice you would offer people looking to make radical career change?
I would say it's hard. You know, it's hard when you're going through it. You know, for me, I always step back and say, wow, I'd already had 30 years. I retired. I had a pension. I had this wonderful opportunity. And for me, it was really hard. Can you imagine for someone who, for whatever reason, doesn't have all the gifts that I had? It's a challenging time in your life. And I think that's why it's just so important in the moment to be mentally, physically, emotionally prepared. And whatever happened beforehand, as hard as it was, you have to try to put that behind you, you know, learn from it, put it behind you, but then make yourself stronger and look forward. It's hard, but if you look forward and channel all that energy towards the transition, you really can be successful and you can achieve the goal of striving for your passion.
Fantastic. So another piece that I hear in your story is, you were planting the seeds for this career long before you actually made the transition. So you were, you know, for decades actually involved in higher education. And so that in a way really positioned you even better.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people said, wow, how did you go from energy to college president? It seems like a real stretch. And in some ways it was. But honestly, my whole life, I've had this vision. I didn't share it with too many people because it would seem a bit, you know, pie in the sky. But when I became college president, a few other college presidents who I had shared it with 10 years ago as part of the planning horizon said, oh, my God, you achieved your dream. So definitely, you know, years in the works from a thought process and a preparation standpoint. I didn't articulate it too early for obvious reasons. I was working in another industry for another company, But I did surround myself with the type of people who would tell me the things I would need in order to fill any gaps, so that by the time I aspired to be a college president, I would have more and more of those gaps addressed.
Brilliant. Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story. And thank you for the amazing work you're doing democratizing access to education to everybody who deserves it in this country, which is everybody. So thank you so much for your time.
Well, thank you so much for allowing me to share my story with your listeners. And now I get to do the best part of the job and go see some of my students. So thanks so much. Yeah, I really appreciate it.
Thank you for joining us today on Cultivating Greatness. I am so grateful for your interest in leading from your own highest and best self, and I'm excited for you to join us for our next podcast. If you liked this podcast, please share it with anyone who would benefit from hearing it. And please give it a 5-star rating and leave a positive review as well. Thank you, and see you next time.